So to continue and to expand a little bit on some of the points that we mentioned last week, and to mention a few further ideas, and also to still extend a few questions that we'll have to keep our eyes out for. So let's focus a little bit more on the idea of the shir for the mikveh specifically, the notion that it has to be arba'im sa', which the Gemara tells us in a few places, the Gemara in Yuma and Daf Lamed Aleph, and the Gemara in Erev and Daf Dalet, and in Psachim and Daf Kuftes, and in Chagiga and Daf Yud Aleph. And the way that we come to that conclusion is a little bit complicated. The Pasuk talks about Rachatz Kol B'sar B'mayim, that we know that the entire body has to be washed. So the Gemara understands that to be telling us, Mayim Shekol Gufo Olabahem. So how does that tell us arba'im sa'? So apparently, in order to come to that result, so that means amal amma brum gimel amos. So you have an amma by an amma with a height of 3 amos. V'shir ochachamim, that is 40 amos. So what does that mean, shir ochachamim? So that means halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, as shirim often are, which essentially we treat like a daraisa. Would probably mean that. That's how the Rashba, for example, expresses it in the Taras Habayis, that this is a din min ha-Torah. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, you shouldn't be confused by the language of shir ochachamim, that they assessed it like that. The Bach does write that the din of arba'im sa' for a nida is actually a din d'rabbanan, and he writes that that's how other Rishonim understood also, and there's a big back and forth about that. So there's a little bit of a discussion how exactly to understand this din and how exactly to understand this line of shir ochachamim. So we won't necessarily try to figure it out now 100%, but that's how we assume. But let's take it for now. This is a din min haTorah, or halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that there is a requirement of 40 saw for a tefilas nida. And the dinim that the Gemara has, that this is connected to the fact that it has to be enough for a person to be covered in. So this is presumably a requirement that comes together. You need both. That's certainly how Rav Shechter assumes in his Sefer Mikveh Etzon, that we'll mention a little bit more about in a moment. There was somewhat of a machlokus about this, and there is a discussion in the Achronim. If you assume that arba'im sa' is a din d'rabbanan, so what's the din min haTorah? Din min haTorah is the language of the pasuk, that the person has to be completely covered. So that much at least we for sure need. But once we have the din of arba'im sa', so then what does that mean? Does that mean that that becomes the new shear for covering a person? So if a person is bigger, that's all you need? So there were some who understood like that. That's how the Darkei Tshuva, for example, understood. But many others understood, like the Aruch HaShulchan, and Rav Shechter thought that that was a davar pashut, that you need to have both, that it has to be 40 saw, and that it has to practically cover you. So if a person was so big that 40 saw wouldn't cover, so then they would have to have both. They'd have to have 40 saw and enough to cover. But going beyond that, so there is what seems to be, I'm going to say it's somewhat of a machlokas, as to how to relate to the shir. And I'm saying it's a machlokas because you could formulate it somewhat as kind of a machlokas to Rav Shechter and the Ragachava. Because Rav Shechter discusses this in his Sefer Mikveh Hatzon, and he says this is a chakira that the Ragachava has in his Chuvis. So this is in the Chuvis, the New York Chuvis. There are many different printings of the Shuvas, the Ragachava, and their volumes still coming out, and they're all fascinating. And this Shuva specifically is a fascinating Shuva, and we'll come back to it because he incorporates many different Shilas and Mikvos. So many different subjects that come up in Mikvos are touched upon in this Shuva. So we'll come back to it later on for other issues. But just for now, the topic that he actually mentions at the beginning is the shear of the mikveh. So the reason I'm going to say it's machlokas is because Rosh Hashanah, maybe this is said as nivus. He doesn't want to argue on the Ragat Shabra, but he says it as a chakira in the Tzafnas Paneach. And then Rosh Hashanah comes out as one side of the chakira. But it seems in the language of the Tzafnas Paneach that he doesn't seem to be saying it as a chakira. He seems to be saying it as he's taking one side, which is the other side. So therefore, one could perhaps read it as a machlokas between Rosh Hashanah and the Ragat Shavar as to which side of this chakira to take, and that perhaps the Ragat Shavar is not posing it as a chakira, but is taking a stance on this. So there's also the question of the language, and the Ragat Shavar's language is fascinating and the topic of much analysis. This whole Derech HaLimud is a topic of much analysis. There are entire volumes in English and in Hebrew that are written about the Ragat Shavar's Derech HaLimud and his whole style of analysis and the philosophy behind it, literally philosophy behind it. And he drew heavily on the Maror Nevuchim and on philosophical writings and on different ways of looking at concepts and analyzing things. So the use of language in the Ragat Shavar's own writings and in writings about the Ragat Shavar is itself a whole topic. So the way this question is portrayed in the Ragat Shavar's own writings, in Rav Shechter's writings about this topic, and in the way others write about it, you find three different sets of language, three different sets of terminologies. So, for example, if you'll read Rav Kasher's writings, say from Mefanech Sefunos, where he has entire categorizations of the Ragat Shavar's formulations, is completely different language. So with that very lengthy introduction, basically the question at hand is, how do you look at the shear of 40 saw for a mikveh? Is this that this is definitional, essentially, and that until you hit 40 saw, it doesn't become a mikveh at all, which Schechter uses the language shir nekuda, which presumably comes from the idea, it's a geometrical term. You have a point, so a point is indivisible. It's just a minimal notion. So something doesn't become itself until it's that, and it can't be divided into anything smaller. So should we say that a mikveh is 40 saw, and anything less than that is simply not a mikveh? Or should we say that it is a shir tziruf, that you are combining essentially a quantitative shir, that if you have less than 40 saw, so you still have a mikveh, you just don't have enough for the requirements of tefillah. Again, in other svarim, quoting the Ragat Shavar, there's different language, more complicated language. In the tshuva, in Kuf Yud Tes, in the Tzafnas Paneach, so he only, at least in the beginning there, he only mentions one side. He refers to it as a shir etzem, that essentially this is the definition of what a mikveh is, that it has to reach 40 saw in order to become a mikveh, and less than that is not going to be a mikveh. So this could perhaps correlate to what we talked about a little bit last week, the question of, is a mikveh defined by the idea that it's gathering water specifically in one place? We talked about the fact that the ashborim concept, the idea that the water is still, is stagnant, is very significant and crucial to the definition of a mikveh in contrast to a mayan. And we saw that the Vilna Gaon thought that that was tied into the definition of the shir, that since the mikveh requires the shir can only be there if it's all in one place, if it's gathered in one place. And that some pointed to the language of Unklus in Parashat Shemini of Beis Kmish LaMayim, that it is a place where water is gathered, and that the Chalkas Yoav and the Avnei Nezer focused on that in order to come to the conclusion that it wasn't even the water that creates the Tara, but that it was the place that creates the Tara. or maybe the place together with the water. So the idea here that the Ragashavra seems to be emphasizing that there is no status of a mikvah with less than a 40 saw, that it's definitional, is a interesting concept. And if so, then that would mean that we have different concepts of mikvahs, because at least in HaTorah, the Gemara tells us in Pesachim and Daf Yedayin and Mibbeis and in Nazir and Daf Hamachas and Ralef that a mikvah for Kalim can be less than a 40 saw, can be kosher with a revius. So are we saying then that you have different definitions of a mikvah? We could have understood it differently. We could have understood it that 40 saw is the shear for tevila, which maybe would have been a intuitive understanding, and maybe that could have emerged from the language of the Gemara, that the Torah is telling us that we need to have rechitzas kol haguf. Chazal understood that rechitzas kol haguf is defined by 40 saw. So maybe you have a mikvah without 40 saw, but you don't have tefilas adam. So therefore, we could understand why a mikvah could be kosher for kalim with less than 40 saw, and that is still called a mikvah. But it's not going to be effective for the tefillah of a person unless it has 40 saw. But if you're going to take this position that it is definitional to the mikvah to have 40 saw, so that it comes out that you have two different definitions of a mikvah. You have a mikvah for kalim, and you have a mikvah for people. This could also have other nafkaminas, because when we say kalim, so this may not help us so much bizman hazab, because when we talk about kalim, we mean kalim tmeim for the purposes of taras. But what about kalim as we're tovel kalim nowadays? So kalim that we buy from an akum and we want to use in our houses. So that's a discussion. Some understand that that doesn't have the din of kalim as in kalim tmeim, but that's treated like tefillah of an adam. That's the whole discussion of why that should be. Maybe we'll come back to that. And there's a long essay about this in the Sefer Zichron Shmuel, the collected writings of Shmuel Brzovsky in Siman Pei, has a whole discussion about how to understand that relationship, and it relates to this. If we'll have time to talk about it today, maybe we'll come back to that. But that also goes to the basic definitional questions of how to relate to the mikvah and to the question of whether the standard of 40 saw is about tzvila for a person specifically, or whether it goes to create a certain status of a mikvah that goes beyond that. So a nafkamina here may be also, as Rav Shechter notes from Reb Chaim Brisker in the Ksavim Mipi HaShmua, that if we have a hashaka, a concept that we'll talk about later, when we want to try to confer a status of non-shuvim, we have rainwater, we need to have rainwater in order to have a kosher mikvah, but let's say we have mayim that was shuvim, so that normally would be not valid for a mikvah, but we can purify it, we can validate it by having it connected to a mikvah of rainwater, and that's one of the processes that is commonly used today. So the question is, when we connect one mikvah to the other, so we need to have a kosher mikvah that is used for that connection, for that hashaka. So does that kosher mikvah, at least on a level of min haTorah, does that have to be 40 saw? Or maybe we could say that it could be kol shehu, because maybe we could have a status of a mikvah, if it's not being used for the tefillah of a person, maybe at least on a level of min haTorah, you can have a status of a mikvah less than 40 saw. So that goes to the question, do you define a mikvah specifically as only 40 saw and above? Or is it that a mikvah can exist less than 40 saw, but the shear of 40 saw is there specifically for the tefillah of a person. And this is also relevant to the other very significant issue that we saw last week, the very major machlokas among the Rishonim about a mayan. So we know that what's brought is one of the major distinctions between a mikvah and a mayan is that a mayan is mitaher be kol shehu. But the question is, so do we say that's true also for the tefillah of a person? Or should we assume that that's only true for a tefillah of a, only true for tefillah of a kelim, and it's not true for a tefillah of a person, that would require 40 sa'ah also? So if we say that the requirement of 40 sa'ah is for tefillah, and it's not tied into mikveh specifically, so then we could understand the view that requires 40 sa'ah for a mayan as well. Now, the Vilna Gaon objected to that view because that's a part of his whole position, that you need to have the two together. You need to have the requirement of 40 sa'ah together with Ashbarin, because Ashbarin is specifically about the requirement for shir, that in order to have the ability to get to that shir, you need to have the chibur, you need to have the connection, and you need to have them all in one place. So the whole concept of Mayan, by his reckoning, is that it can't have a requirement of a shir, so he's going to disagree, theoretically, with that position that requires 40 sa'ah. Even though one could still say maybe it's possible to have both, and that the 40 sa'ah is a requirement in tefillah rather than requirement in the Mayan itself, as a position that was discussed by Rav Shimon Shkap in the Shari Yosha. So this is also relevant to a very significant machlokas that both Rav Shechter and the Rav Shavar discusses. Rav Shavar brings this in the beginning of his tshuva, and Rav Shechter talks about it in his essay in Bekveh Atzon in a little bit greater length. And it has to do with a issue that's brought up in the Mishnah in Mikvos, in the second parak, in the second Mishnah, the second parak of Mikvos. So there is a din there of, this is one of the major themes in the whole issue of Chazakos, which is why it's a major Sheh Shmaisa concept and a major Shari Yosha concept, the issue of Mikvah Shenimdad V'Nimsa Chaser. So let's say you shall decide to measure the mikvah, and you determine that it is lacking. Apparently, it doesn't have the 40 sa'ah that we normally would require for a mikvah. So the problem is, there have already been taros done in this mikvah from before. So do we assess this retroactively? Do we assume that we have to worry that those who were immersed in this mikvah were immersed in a mikvah that was insufficient? So how do we view this in terms of chazakas? Do we say that this chazaka is now impacted retroactively? Do we say that we only use this going forward? Do we say there was a chazaka meikara? So the position of most of the Tanoim is l'chumra on this. So the Mishnah in Mikvos says that all the taros are no good. And that's also the position of Rabbi Akiva, when this is discussed as well in the Gemara in Kiddushin and Dav Samach Vav. And there the Gemara has a whole interesting discussion that is brought in parallel to this, the whole question of a Kohen Sha'avad B'nim Sa'chalo. If you have somebody who is working in the Beis HaMikdash, and it was later determined that he's disqualified because he is a chalal. So what does that say about the avodos that he did beforehand? So that was the whole discussion in the Gemara, and there's a hechsher that goes to a certain extent based on the pasuk, but the question is, how far does it go? And there is a parallel that's drawn there. So Rabbi Tarfon is of the opinion that we should rely on the chazaka, and we should say that there is a chazaka at least until now. So we have a problem from here on in, but you can say that there is a chezkas haguf, essentially. You could say that the mikvah was bechezkas tar. And therefore, we can assume that everything that happened before we messed up this chazaka, before we assessed that there's a problem, everything until now was determined to be good. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees, and Rabbi Akiva says that we have a different chazaka, And if we're looking to confer Tahara on the people who immersed in this mikvah, so they were b'chezkas tameh beforehand. So we have to undo that chazaka. So that chezkas tameh is the default position. And we don't know that this mikvah was any good. This mikvah, as far as we can tell, is deficient. So we have to fight against their chezkas tuma. So their chezkas tuma is the default position, and we can't undo that. So that's the view of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Tarfon is, no, let's look at the mikvah. The mikvah is b'chezkas tar, is b'chezkas mitahir, that it's able to confer tara. And let's leave it at that until now that we're seeing it to be deficient from here on in, but not from before now. So what's the machlokus about? So what the Ragachavar seems to be understanding, and as Shachter expands upon, is the question of, is there really a cheskas haguf to this mikvah? Because what kinds of chazakas are going to be effective here? So if you have a chazaka in the object itself, so then, okay, you can say that that is a chazaka that is significant, and that then anything that deals with that can be defined by that. So a woman who was tovelis in that mikvah, we can assume that she is tahora because she is impacted by the chezkas haguf of that mikvah. So we don't have to worry about her chezkas tuma, because we know she went in this mikvah, and this mikvah has a cheskas aguf that is going to impact her. But if we can't look at it as a cheskas aguf, we're just trying to figure out how much water was used. So that's basically a chazaka d'dina, a cheskas adin. And that is not strong enough to outweigh a cheskas aguf. So we have the cheskas aguf that she was tmeya, and therefore that's going to outweigh the cheskas adin of how much water was in the mikvah. So essentially it all boils down to the question of, was there a cheskas aguf on the mikvah? So that's his understanding. And therefore he says the position of Rabbi Tarfon is that the mikvah has a cheskas aguf, and therefore we can be Mako. So as Rav Shechter concludes over there, that it comes out that we're really machmir against the Tarfon, that the majority of Tanoim and the language of the Mishnah in Mikvos is that all the Taros are no good. So that's the assumption that there is no Cheskas Haguf on this Mikvah. And it says that's also apparently how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch. How do we know? Because if you look in the beginning of Siman Reish Aleph, so the din is that we require 40 saw for tefillah, whether we're talking about a mikvah or a mayan. That's what it sounds like. So apparently, what can you understand from there? So you can understand that the 40 saw is apparently a din in tefillah. So if it's a din in tefillah, so that's why you would require it for the mayan as well. And if that's the case, so then it's not definitional to the mikvah, which the truth is, that's a little bit easier to understand, because it's one thing to say it doesn't become a mikvah until you have 40 saw, which, just thinking kind of intuitively, so if you just have a pit in the ground, right? So it's not a mikvah, just to think, you know, a little bit generally. So we build a mikvah in the community. Okay, so it's a mikvah whether it's filled or not. You have a pit in the ground and no water has rained into it. So what would make that a mikvah? But if you had a mikvah and then some water leaked out of it, it hasn't been filled yet, so it's not a mikvah anymore. So you would relate to that just logically as a incomplete mikvah, and that you can't use it right now for tefillah because it doesn't have enough substance in it. So not that that's necessarily an adequate approach to the lumdish issue, but just it's hard to imagine that you would really see it as losing its status of a mikvah just because it doesn't have enough water in it, even if it doesn't attain that status until the first time. But it would seem like its definition it's hard to believe that it's contingent on that. So whether or not there may still be a different basis for Rabbi Tarfon's position, and how exactly to see that parallel to Kohen Sha'aviv and Imsechalo, which is a fascinating sugya in and of itself, is an interesting question. But that's its own discussion, and there are other reasons in terms of Hilchos Chazakos to look at the past or to look at the future and how to classify reyeses, how to classify that which would come and interfere with the chazaka. But the idea that mikvah is defined specifically seems a little bit harder to say. But at the same time, it does seem like that is the position that the Rebbe is taking, at least initially. So it seems like maybe there is somewhat of a machlokas about this. And also the way that it is summarized in other places outside of this tshuva, again, in the voluminous secondary literature that is out there. If you look in the Mefanech Tzifunas, for example, I think it's in Perek Tess, I think in the Mefanech Tzifunas, where he talks about the various chakiras of the Ragachavar's lexicon. So there he talks about the mikvah chakira, has a completely different language there. It talks about Mizgis and Shuchnis, all kinds of very creative language, but there it does also seem to take the position that the mikvah is defined specifically by the Shira. So that perhaps would have to define it differently in its nature in terms of how it's matar from a Mayan. And that requires us to say one way or another, either that the mikvah and a Mayan are fundamentally different in how they function, or that somehow a Mayan actually is functioning like a mikvah, is considered to have a shear because it's connected to the ground, and that even though it's flowing, that creates its own type of connection. Maybe that's something we'll explore a little bit more next time. So I guess we'll stop here. And I thank you for the flexibility with the timing and the times. And